Hi, this is Ben Trefney, news director at KALW. We're in a membership drive right now. You can support what we do. More than 70% of our funding comes from listeners like you. Please go to donate at kalw.org, click it, and keep these stories coming. Thank you.
KALW.
In 2015, the former Deputy Chief Minister of Punjab, India, Sukhbir Singh Badal, wrote a Facebook post that went viral. He wrote, "I want Punjab to be like California. I know it cannot be done in one day, one year, or even 10 years, but I'm sowing seeds." His father, the former chief minister, was asked about this at a press conference.
Punjab nu California banan di gal kiti.
The reporter says, "There's been talk of making Punjab into California." The chief minister replies, "We are making it California." In response to this, Punjabis on social media started posting pictures and videos of poor infrastructure in Punjab. Flooded streets, unrepaired roads, children crossing train tracks to get to school, villages with no access to water, and writing hashtag Punjab California underneath. They were collectively trolling the Punjab government. Some even put up road signs in their cities saying, "The Chief Minister's California, 0 kilometers. But jokes aside, this idea of California as a model for Punjab has deeper roots. KALW's Kaval Roop Kaur Singh picks up the story from here.
3535, combination 35.
The weekly farmers market in Milpitas, California is bustling. Dozens of small farmers are here selling their fruits and vegetables to passersby. Ku Yang is one of them.
$1.70 for this? This is yours, right?
He farms with his family on 6 acres in Fresno. Ku's farm is small, as are most in California. But it's the large-scale industrial farmers who grow most of the state's food. In fact, California was a pioneer of industrial agriculture. Carl Sauer, a geographer at UC Berkeley in the 1960s, pointed out that the Green Revolution was attempting to export the Californian model of agriculture to places like Punjab in India. I've been reporting on farming in the two states, so I ask Ku if he knows of any Punjabi farmers in Fresno.
There are, but the funny thing is they're more the professional ones, the really big ones that do like the orchards and the almonds and the peaches where they do in, you know, industrial ag. I've seen a couple Indians, Punjabis, there doing that. Small little farmers market, not as much.
California produces over a third of the vegetables and two-thirds of the fruits and nuts consumed in the U.S. If California is the produce basket of the U.S., then Punjab is the grain basket of India. The main crops are wheat and rice, but most of the Punjabi farmers there are nothing like the Punjabi farmers in California. That's what I find out firsthand. I'm in a grain market in Chandigarh, the capital of Punjab. Workers are sweeping wheat into a mound and feeding it through a processor. A farmer from a neighboring city, Gurjant Singh, watches silently. He's just sold 45,000 pounds of grain. But he says his business isn't going so well. I haven't been able to save anything, he says. I'm just barely able to cover my expenses. Using fertilizers and pesticides has become really expensive for farmers in Punjab, especially when it turns out they don't work. 2 years ago, farmers in the cotton-growing belt were growing BT cotton. BT cotton is a pest-resistant, genetically modified seed produced by Monsanto, the U.S.-based multinational corporation. In 2015, after whiteflies devastated Punjab's BT cotton crop, a new pesticide called Oberon was marketed to farmers by another multinational corporation, Bayer. But farmers say the pesticide failed. Sukhjit Kaur remembers. "First, we had a lot of cotton," she says. "We sprayed it with so many pesticides, and when it was supposed to be ripe for picking, it just dried up." I'm surrounded by a group of elderly farmers in Begelere, a village in the Bathinda district of Punjab, at the center of Punjab's cotton growing belt. Bathinda is in one of the regions with the highest cancer rates in the state. There's a train that departs each evening from Bathinda called the Cancer Train. It's filled every day with patients seeking cancer treatment in a hospital 200 miles away. I ask the villagers if there's a cancer problem in their village. A farmer named Bajitthar Singh answers. At least 10 people in our village have it, he says. Then everyone begins to talk at once. One man, Bola Singh, speaks up above the rest. The people here are so poor, he says, we can't even afford to get tested. So we don't even know if we have cancer or not. The villagers say they think pesticides are the reason for all the cancer in the region. I ask if they can show me one of the pesticides that they use. They bring me a blue and yellow spray can with a picture of the sun shining over a bountiful farm. It's a fungicide called Tilox, manufactured by Axis Crop Science, an Indian pesticide company. On the back, it says, "Danger, keep away from people." It lists the active ingredient as a chemical called propiconazole. I find out later that propiconazole is listed by the US EPA as a possible human carcinogen, meaning it could cause cancer. Where can people go? How can they get tested for cancer? Asks Bola. Even if they go, no one listens. Only the wealthy get treated, not the poor. A few days later, I visit a pesticide factory in Derabasi, a city in southern Punjab. The factory is owned by Pioneer Pesticides, an Indian pesticide company. Yashbir Singh Mann, the coordination manager, tells me to put a hospital mask over my nose and mouth before we go inside. He doesn't put one on, though. He says he's used to the environment. The factory floor is large and open. Two giant chemical tanks stand in one corner. Workers in an assembly line bottle and package pesticides. Some of them aren't wearing gloves or shoes. I can smell the chemicals through my mask. After about 20 minutes, we go back outside. I'm relieved. Yashbir flips through the manual that details the provisions of the Insecticide Act, outlining the Indian government's regulations on pesticides.
There are very strict guidelines to use these products.
He says pesticide companies are required to file reports detailing how much product they've sold in order to comply with regulations. I ask him, is it possible for a company to lie in the records and say they sold less than they actually did so they aren't penalized for their extra profit? He says, it is possible. There are some differences between the U.S. and India in the way pesticide use is regulated. In the U.S., farmers are required to report to the government how much pesticide they use. But in India, there's no such requirement. This means farmers could easily use more than the recommended amount without consequences. The farmer has no responsibility to tell the government how much of our product he has bought, he says. The farmer only goes to the government when he has a problem with a product. That's what happened when Bayer's pesticide Oberon didn't kill whiteflies on cotton plants. Corporations such as Bayer often subcontract with local Indian pesticide companies to have their products made. Multinational companies have been in India since the beginning of the pesticide industry, says Yashbir. There were no Indian companies in the field until later. They started up slowly and followed the multinationals. Yashbir says this trend began with Bayer around the 1980s. Bayer began as part of a German conglomerate called IG Farben. During World War II, IG Farben ran its own concentration camps and conducted experiments on Jewish prisoners. After the war, IG Farben was split into multiple companies, including Bayer. Bayer started to make pesticides and herbicides. Today, it is one of the largest distributors of agricultural chemicals in Punjab, with about 20 distribution centers across the state. Recently, Bayer announced that it would pay nearly $70 billion to buy Monsanto, another major player in Indian agriculture. Monsanto and Bayer would not speak with me for this story, but Monsanto's sustainability report says that it is working with Indian farmers to increase production sustainably. It also explains how Monsanto has engaged in philanthropy in India, preventing snake bites and child labor, helping build toilets, installing solar panels. But there's no mention of working with the farmers whose BT cotton crops were damaged, or with families of farmers who had committed suicide, a growing problem in Punjab. Chemical companies hold a lot of power in Punjab, but a small percentage of farmers are not buying in. Barminder Sharma is using a hoe to uproot the weeds on his 11-acre farm. Out of the many farms I've seen in Punjab, this is the first one where I've seen a hoe and not just a tractor tilling the land. Barminder's farm is organic. It's in a village called Sunam in the Sangrur district of Punjab. Sangrur was once lauded as a great success in agriculture following the Green Revolution, but today it has one of the highest farmer suicide rates in the state. At the end of the day, we lost more than we gained, he says. We may have produced more, but our quality went down. We lost our soil, our water, and our youth, who are committing suicide today. Before he became an organic farmer, Barminder was a lawyer for 12 years. Then he decided to return to his ancestral land and begin farming. Initially, it was difficult. He had to learn how to replenish the soil with natural nutrients. Barminder opens the lid of a giant black barrel. Inside is a mixture of cow manure and yogurt that is fermenting. He says this was how farmers would fertilize their fields in the old days. It's what he uses to keep the soil healthy, so he doesn't have to rely on the market for seeds, fertilizer, or pesticides. He's also in a cooperative where farmers loan each other equipment instead of buying their own. He uses WhatsApp groups to sell his crops. He reads an order that just came in.
1 kg kadu, 1 kg pindi, 1 kg karela.
That's squash, ladyfinger, and bitter gourd. Barminder also grows peppers, eggplants, peanuts, turmeric, rice, lentils, and wheat. We go into a mud hut that Barminder built on his farm. He meditates here every day. I ask him what he wants people to know about Punjab. Our Punjab is sick, he says. We need to take responsibility for that. What will we say to the next generations after we've destroyed the environment and consumed all the water? How will we face them? Barminder works closely with Kheti Virasat Mission, an NGO that encourages organic farming. According to them, less than 1% of Punjab's total agricultural land is being farmed organically. In California, it's actually about the same. Less than 1% of California's farmland is organic.
And this is how you take it to the sheller. Mm. The sheller, they take this off.
Back in California, I'm cracking open nuts with Sandeep Singh, a Punjabi almond farmer on his farm in Tracy. He left Punjab in 1997.
They're really good.
Yeah, they taste pretty good these days.
Sandeep is a conventional grower, not an organic one.
How come you didn't want to be organic?
Because when we bought this orchard, it was already 3 years old. I didn't plant the trees. It was already planted. So it was already too late to go organic. If you want to go organic, I guess you have to start it from the beginning.
I think Sandeep's answer is a metaphor for the dilemma that the farmers of the world face today. What do you do with the orchard you've inherited? You didn't plant it, you didn't develop it, yet you must find a way to make it bloom. For Cross Currents, I'm Kamalroop Gaur Singh.